Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome, folks. Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman today, as the man's voice just introduced. I don't even know who that guy is, but he knew I was going to be on the show. I don't know how that happened. Walker Wildman, good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be on the show.
And Fred Jackson, good morning to you, sir.
Always great to be with you guys.
We also have Ray Pritchard, who is on with us from Kansas City. And so I have my phone. I have ready to text back and forth with Ray. Good morning, Ray, by the way.
Good morning, Ed. How you doing?
I'm doing good. From Keep Believing Ministries.
Yes.
And so I texted Ray, and I said, you ready to rumble? And he said, let's rock and roll, and then sent me like two or three, four of these kind of fancy emojis that, you know, that look like him. You know, people have, you get that set up.
Yeah.
And I said, sometimes the last thing we need is an old person who knows how to use fancy emojis. He's blowing me up with all these things. And anyway, Ray, we're always glad when you are able to join us.
Thank you.
A lot of times you're out teaching the Bible, and we got to listen to Ray Pritchard yesterday during our longer devotions on Wednesday, mm-hmm. and Buddy Smith, our senior vice president, played something that Ray had done as a devotion to his own board, mm-hmm. and it was just fantastic about
Hebrews 11,
man, mm-hmm. just so inspirational. So Ray, tip of the hat to you, sir, and also
thank you, Ed.
Thankful to God for his using of you and others who preach the gospel and feed the body of Christ. So, mm-hmm. all right. Let's get started. You know what, Fred? This, I don't know what we're going to talk about today. what a day yesterday.
What a day. It is the day after the acquittal of President Trump on both articles of impeachment. The vote yesterday, we'll get to the Mitt Romney defection on one of those articles in just a few moments. But it is the morning after, and if you thought the president slept in this morning and relaxing, think again. He was up early because he was scheduled to speak at the National Prayer Breakfast this morning. So you always kind of wonder about President Trump. Okay, which way is he going to go with this? It's the morning after his acquittal. It is 2 days after the State of the Union address, which had lots of controversy in that. So what is the president going to say this morning? Now, we're going to play a clip of the president this morning. By the way, he walked into this venue in Washington, D.C., and someone had placed two newspapers where he was going to sit. I think one was the USA Today and one was the Washington Post, I believe. He held them both up because they had big banner headlines, acquitted. All right, so don't blame the president for bringing newspapers to the event. Someone did that for him. But he got up to speak after the keynote address was given this morning by Harvard professor Arthur Brooks, who in his address described a crisis of contempt and polarization in the nation and urged people gathered there to love your enemies. All right, so right after Professor Brooks spoke, President Trump gets up. This is a little bit of what the president had to say this morning at this National Prayer Breakfast. Cut one.
Sometimes you don't make it easy, and I certainly don't make it easy on you. And I will continue that tradition, if I might, this morning. As everybody knows, my family, our great country, and your president have been put through a terrible ordeal by some very dishonest and corrupt people. They have done everything possible to destroy us, and by so doing, very badly hurt our nation. They know what they are doing is wrong, but they put themselves far ahead of our great country. I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong. Nor do I like people who say, I pray for you, when they know that that's not so.
All right.
That was now, he was speaking that last part, at least, about Nancy Pelosi.
Yes.
Who was at, who was she up there on, yeah, at the front?
She was at the front. She had a few moments earlier to all of this, had given a prayer for the persecuted people of faith around the country, around the world.
Yeah. Well, listen, we'll go around the table, so to speak, and let everyone say whatever you want about that. Here's what I took from that. And listen to some of that speech from the prayer breakfast. By the way, I do want to let our listeners know that the president is expected to speak live at 11 a.m. Central Time, we will carry that live here on this program, on American Family Radio. The only caveat is that it's supposed to start then. Sometimes he's late or he's detained, circumstances, what have you. We have no idea how long it'll last. But we thought in the wake of the acquittal that it would be good for us to hear what the president has to say. Now, my own personal opinion, this is when I heard this, I thought two things. First, was a little vulnerable there, I think. I think he, for the first time that I recall, I began to not realize. I knew up in my head, but I just heard in his voice the hurt and the pain that he's been through over the last 3 years. This goes beyond just the attempt to impeach him.
Agreed.
This is, you know, the Mueller report, the constant, you know, the resistance, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Nancy Pelosi, you're not going to get $1 for the wall. Kind of thing. We're going to resist you every step of the way. I heard that in his voice. He demonstrated some pain there. Having said that, I wish he had not done that at the National Prayer Breakfast. I mean, I don't know what I would have done, so it's unfair. I'm not judging the president. I'm just saying I'm not sure that was the right place to do that and to take such a clear shot at his political opponents. But at the same time, I think I understand because the guy is human. And that seems to be what we heard this morning. So let's just go around. Walker, Ray, yeah. Fred, what do you guys think? Disagree, agree, whatever.
Yeah. What President Trump was voicing there, I think, whether he should have voiced it, I think that's up for debate. But what he was voicing, I think a lot of people have thought throughout this process, and that is, you know, just Nancy Pelosi, let's take her for example. You know, she's leading this venomous process against the president based on no evidence, and but at the same time she says she's praying for him. So can you do that? Probably, but it just seems you would think if she was so interested in President Trump's success as the leader of the free world that she wouldn't be doing things such as impeachment based on no crime. So that the motive there does come into question when you say you're praying for someone.
All right, Ray.
Mr. Trump is a man of many parts. I suppose, Ed, we could say we're all people of many different parts. And we saw, as you said, a different side of Donald Trump this morning. I suppose if any of us had been through what he and his family have been through, and then you have the national prayer breakfast scheduled, then, you know, the morning after your acquittal, it would be, you're asking a lot to say, get up there and make some spiritual comments, but don't mention what you have just been through.
Right.
I thought the thing I appreciated most was his honesty in saying, I'm trying to love my enemies or trying to love people who don't like me, but it's hard.
Yeah.
That was a very honest thing. You know, it's hard for me too. It's hard for all of us. And we saw a side in those comments of the president we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I think he was being real.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about Donald Trump being a unique individual, unlike any other president that we've been exposed to in our lifetime and even before, if you read the history books. And so I appreciate his honesty.
Yeah.
He spoke from his heart this morning.
Right.
As you pointed out, Ed, it's not just this impeachment. He found out very early on about the deep state.
Yeah.
They were after him to deny him his election victory before November of 2016.
You know, they leaked his phone call, a couple of phone calls, one to the Prime Minister of Australia. They leaked that the first week he was in office, something crazy
so
like that.
When he was talking about deep state and all those things, added to that the fake news, the media.
Right.
We've said many times over the last 3 years, you know, sitting at this table, that he is under constant attack.
Yeah.
This is a media, this is a political party, Hollywood, that hate him.
Right.
With a passion. So he's just been through this. He's had to listen to Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler get up there. Adam Schiff saying that, you know, if the president gets elected again, he's going to sell Alaska to the Russians.
Right. No, I know.
I we're not kidding.
No, I know. That's right.
Adam Schiff said that.
Yeah.
I mean, so he's, and so I think he was speaking from the heart, I guess. You know, I think Ray alluded to this. We're all fallen individuals. We know what Scripture says to love our enemies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think he was being honest, that he has honest questions about the sincerity of a Nancy Pelosi,
right,
who says, I'm praying for the president.
And then she tears up his speech.
And then he tears up
television.
His speech.
Right.
The first reference there, he says, I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong. People believe that's in reference to Mitt Romney.
Right.
Who turned against the president yesterday on one of those articles of impeachment and voted against him. Mitt Romney gave an interview just before that to Chris Wallace. And also Mitt Romney got up on the Senate floor and he said, listen to what he had to say, because he brought God in, Mitt Romney did, brought God into the equation as to why he was voting against the president. Cut number two.
But my promise before God to apply impartial justice required that I put my personal feelings and political biases aside. Were I to ignore the evidence that has been presented, it would, I fear, expose my character to history's rebuke.
So that was Mitt Romney. So Mitt Romney basically believing what Chuck Schumer and Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler have said. That the president was out to get Joe Biden. That was part of that phone call to the Ukrainian leader. And I guess the president is not buying his Mitt Romney's explanation as to why he did that. And other people aren't buying it either.
You know, Walker, one of the things that has struck me through this whole first 3 years of President Trump's administration is that you see what you want to see. And it has seemed clear to me, especially with impeachment, that if you support the president, you see this as a purely political act of revenge. I'm talking about impeachment. If you hate the president or you oppose the president, you see the fact that he eats Big Macs as a sign of corruption, and he's a Russian asset, and he's bad, and he's this. And to me, that's what I heard from Mitt Romney. You know, it's really kind of dangerous. You always think you're right in your heart and your mind, but Mitt Romney has been angry at Donald Trump for a long time, and it seems to me clearly that he saw the quote-unquote evidence that the House managers presented in the light of his attitude towards the president to begin with.
Sure. Yeah, nothing about from a legal standpoint, nothing about what President Trump has done was impeachable. I mean, I actually respect more the way that Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins went about this, and Lamar Alexander from Tennessee. They said, the senators, the three of them said, I don't like what President Trump said on the phone call. I think he shouldn't have talked about the Bidens on when you're talking about investigations from foreign governments, but that's not impeachable.
Right.
And so I don't like what he said, but it's not a high crime or misdemeanor. That's, to me, that's more respectable. I might disagree with them that what he said was wrong.
Right.
I might think what he said is fine, but I at least understand their position.
Yeah.
But what Mitt Romney's done here is he's sided with the Democrats on something that's just not true.
And, you know, Ray, of course, now Mitt Romney, I guess, has to couch this in these kinds of terms, because, you know, a lot of people might say, well, listen, he's not going to be convicted. Why are you siding with Chuck Schumer and Jerry Nadler and Nancy Pelosi? Why are you siding with people who so clearly hate the president? I guess he has to say, well, there's a reason why I'm kind of betraying the voters who put me in office. It's because I owe God, you know, this, that, or the other. Is that too harsh to say? Look, I mean, he had no choice, really.
Look, we know these guys don't like each other, right? It's deep-seated. You couldn't. They're oil and water. At the best of times, these are not two guys going to hang out together and shoot pool. They're just, they're just two different personalities, and they have a history together. The thing that, strikes me, and a question I want to ask back, look, Mitt Romney, he talked about history. He's going to go down as the first senator in American history to vote for the removal of the president from his own political party. That's never happened before. Question, what kind of future does he have inside the Republican Party? I just wonder, how long can he even stay as Republican?
Yeah. Well, also, you know, let's not forget that just not too long ago, maybe a year or two ago, Mitt Romney used President Trump's endorsement to get elected in Utah.
Yes.
That's right.
Right.
That's
interesting.
He let President Trump come to Utah and campaign for him. Now he voted to impeach him a year and a half later.
Yeah. In a sense, I mean, you've got, as you said, Walker, you really raised the point exactly right. You've got Murkowski and Collins, who have been at odds with the president on a number of things, yet they voted to acquit yesterday. Romney is the only one who voted, at least on one of those articles, to remove him. He's trying to say he's got the high moral ground, but really, isn't it true? Murkowski and Collins acted more honorably. They expressed their disapproval of certain things and voted. They said it doesn't rise to the level of removal from office, which, frankly, is the correct conclusion.
Right. Well, the Romney move was much talked about on talk shows last night, including on Fox. Laura Ingraham on her program last night let it be known that she certainly is not happy with the Romney move. And she says, she even says in 4.5 years, he's not up for re-election this year. 4.5 years, he's up for re-election. She says she'll move to Utah to run against him. Here's cut number 11.
Utah's junior senator reminded us of why he couldn't connect with most regular working class people. They don't like politicians who claim to be holier than thou when they're really just sticking a shiv in your back. It's called payback. But if he were up for re-election this year, the people of Utah would have their own payback against him. Because they were defrauded by Romney. For when he had to choose, he chose Schumer and Kamala over common sense and conservatism. Romney, I hope, enjoys his brief moment in the sun while he's lauded by the very people who spent the last 20 years attacking him. Utah should never forget. And if I have to move there to run against him in 4.5 years, I will.
Well, I hope she doesn't do that. She's not going to win in Utah. I think you just about have to be Mormon if you're going to win in Republican circles in Utah. I don't know. That might have been a joke.
Yeah, she's probably talking cheap.
I don't know. She's got a great gig where she's at. I don't know if she would like moving to Utah and running and maybe losing. But anyway, I think her points, Walker, were fair. I think that Mitt Romney, I was kind of surprised that Mitt Romney actually won in Utah.
Yeah.
Just simply because he has been such a rhino.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he wouldn't, the old, you know, barb against him is he wouldn't even stand up for a chicken sandwich when he was running against Barack Obama in 2012.
Yes.
Remember,
yes.
He would not come out in favor of Chick-fil-A after the blowback from, you know, Dan Cathy's comments about natural marriage. He wouldn't even come out and say, I'm going to go buy a chicken sandwich. The guy has that little backbone.
Right.
He was only a half a Republican when he was governor of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
His support for the gay agenda in that state, or his lack of backbone, allowed that to just really kind of metastasize in that state. So I was actually kind of surprised that he won. Probably it's just on name recognition, but
yeah, I think that people are overestimating Utah. You know, people like Laura Ingraham and others are saying that he's done for as a politician. Next go around, he'll be ousted. But, I mean, the Utah voters, surely they knew about Mitt Romney and his establishment-type record when they voted for him a year and a half ago. So I don't think much is going to change. He may get challenged, but I wouldn't be surprised if he kept his Senate seat because we knew, everyone knew about Mitt Romney before. This is not a new thing for Mitt Romney, the way he's behaving.
All right, Fred, what else we got?
Well, just before we go to the break, let's update what's going on in Iowa. They're slowly counting things. The ballots from Monday night, the caucuses there. At last report, about 97% of the votes had been counted. Now, you will remember about 24 hours ago, we said Buttigieg had a significant lead. Well, this morning, here it is. Roughly, Buttigieg and Sanders are tied for about 26% of the vote each. The other big story is Biden is a distant fourth. In fact, he's going to come out of Iowa with no delegates at all. Elizabeth Warren is third, but she's a distant third, too, behind Sanders and behind Buttigieg. So we head to New Hampshire. Next Tuesday is the New Hampshire primary. And the question then becomes, because it's believed that Sanders will do very well there.
Yeah, New Hampshire is right next to his home state.
Vermont.
And
Biden likely will not do well. So people are starting to wonder, okay, why did Buttigieg do so well in Iowa? And so there's the speculation begins. Could it be that there are some people now seeing Buttigieg has the moderate candidate alternative to Sanders versus Biden? Is there some of that chemistry starting to come into the thinking of Democrats that Biden, for the reasons that we talk about here, he's too old, et cetera, that Buttigieg would be the more likely person to represent so-called moderates? But Ed, as you have pointed out, there are no moderates in the Democratic Party these days. A true moderate's not going to win. Biden, to that effect, took on Buttigieg at a town hall meeting in New Hampshire yesterday and basically said, you know, Buttigieg, his only political experience is mayor of a city. You can't jump, he says, Biden says, from mayor of a city to president of the United States. Of course, many Christians across the country would wonder if the nation is willing to elect an open homosexual too, which Buttigieg is. It's for the Democrats, they not only have now the acquittal of President Trump, but they're also, and even the mainstream media is pointing this out, even in their story about President Trump this morning, National Prayer Breakfast, in that Democrats now are having to deal with chaos. It's not just the fact that Iowa really messed up with their little plan to have an expedited vote count. They really messed up. But now the confusion over which way to go, a Sanders or a Biden or a Buttigieg or Elizabeth Warren, there's real questions as to who is going to be able to defeat Donald Trump. And I think a lot of Democrats think they don't have a winner yet.
Well, and you have the billionaire, Mike Bloomberg, also a mayor of a city. So to Joe Biden's point, although New York City being mayor of that is far different than being mayor of South Bend, Indiana, which is Mayor Pete Buttigieg's only experience. Well, listen, this we saw this coming. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of chaos in the Democratic Party. Iowa seemed to mirror that.
Yes.
And so we'll have to wait and see. New Hampshire is this coming Tuesday, right?
Correct.
All right. So we will find maybe a little bit more when that happens. All right. We'll be back in a couple of minutes for more of today's issue. We got nothing but Italians on this show.
We're changing lives one question at a time.
Trivia Friday is educational programming.
What big cat can't roar?
That's pathetic.
The mime cat. I've seen them. They got those white gloves on their paws.
You use milk to sweeten your breath.
In the first century.
What happened when the milk soured?
You got trouble.
Yeah,
right
that's
there.
A good.
You don't get a second date. I'll just tell you that right now.
Trivia Friday, 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman here from American Family Association and American Family Radio, where I serve as president. Hey, one of the special places we go on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. is Arlington National Cemetery. Everyone on our tour gets so excited about that day when we visit the cemetery because of the patriotism that we all have and the love for our country and the appreciation for the men and women who've given their lives for our nation, for our freedoms, for our liberty, for our way of life. We're going to be visiting Arlington National Cemetery on the Friday of our spiritual heritage tours in Washington, D.C. in June and September, and we'll be seeing and experiencing the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. If you want the information on these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. There are growing calls from lawmakers to censure House Speaker Nancy Pelosi after she tore up a copy of President Trump's State of the Union address on national television. Pelosi remains defiant. She called the president's remarks a dirty speech. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich said he was disgusted and insulted by Pelosi's behavior. It was incredibly disrespectful to those Americans who were mentioned in the president's speech, including the families of Rocky Jones and Kayla Mueller, two Americans who were killed on American soil by illegals. Democrats, meanwhile, are saying Pelosi did not go far enough. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib said the speaker should have shredded the president's speech. Many years ago, Congressman Joe Wilson shouted, "You lie," during a speech by President Obama. He was castigated by the mainstream media. For some odd reason, though, the mainstream media has turned a blind eye to Speaker Pelosi's behavior. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson, who's news director for OneNewsNow.com. I want to let you know, if you're just now tuning in, at 11 o'clock Central Time, President Trump is expected to make an address, and we have decided to carry that live on this program. So here's how the logistics of that work out. Sometimes the president is a little late to these kinds of speeches, so we will proceed as normal, and then when he begins to speak, we will cut immediately to the president. Even if that means, by the way, interrupting our top-of-the-hour news broadcast, we will jump in. If for some reason he speaks for a half an hour and it looks like he's going to go beyond the length of this program, however, we will end the carrying of his speech at 11:30 to return to regular AFR programming. And so we expect him really not to speak for that long. All right. Before we get started, we have one of our guests is on just a minute. Dr. Ray Pritchard is also on with us. Ray, tell our listeners about Keep Believing Ministries and about your website and what people can find there.
Hey, if you come on over to keepbelieving.com, you're going to find a repository, a biblical library of Bible study materials. We want to help people understand the Word of God in really simple fashion. So there are Bible studies, there's videos, FAQs, written questions and answers, there's sermon outlines. Basically, we have folks coming from all over the world who want to know, what does God's Word say and how can I understand it? It's very simply laid out and it's all free. So come on over to keepbelieving.com and check us out.
And I highly recommend Ray Pritchard's materials. And by the way, it's all free on his website because Ray is filthy, stinking rich. No, that is not
in
true.
In blessings, yes.
That is not true. So, Ray, if someone went to your website and they liked what you provide and they hear and read and are blessed and they wanted to make a donation, could they do that at your website?
There's a donate button. You can find it easily. And like a lot of ministries, we've got a number of different ways you can give. So just you can come to keepbelieving.com, and if the Lord puts that on your heart, you can go to the donate page and you can help us out.
Right. And that Ray has never asked me to do that. In fact, has never asked me to let people know about his ministry at all. That's just the kind of integrity he has. So anyway, all right, we want to welcome someone else with integrity and someone else who is a blessing to the body of Christ. That's Jan Markell, who's host of Understanding the Times, heard Saturdays at 1 p.m. Central Time and Sundays at 12 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio. Jan, welcome back to Today's Issue.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be back.
Well, our folks love what you do over the weekends and always love to have you on the program on Thursdays. Fred, what do we got for Jan today?
I just want to know, does she have a good tan?
That's right. She was not in Minnesota for the last 30 days, right?
Yeah. No, I was surfing in the Pacific Ocean.
Down in in conservative-friendly California.
Exactly, yep. They needed my conservative influence out there, so off I went.
Well, yeah. I got to say that Minnesota, California, is there much difference in terms of the general political consensus? There's Minnesota half and
no,
half?
No, it's a good point. It's a good point. And I told folks out there that, I mean, politically, we're very much alike. I mean, obviously, weather-wise, it couldn't be more different. But when it comes to politics, you've got socialists on the run out there, and you got socialists running things here as well, here in Minnesota. It's very tragic. And I think out there it might be pretty obvious. I mean, the illegal situation is a political factor. But let me just say about Minnesota, I don't think it's so much an immigrant factor in Minnesota as Minnesota's roots. Just, I mean, they go back, I think they probably could go back 100 years and you would find diehard far-left socialism, communism going on here in this state. I mean, obviously you got good people here. I don't want to tar and feather the whole state, but it's just a history here in this state that somehow it's been far left for far longer than I've been alive.
Well, what was that you said? Roots? The roots? Is that what you said, Jan?
Yeah, the roots.
I understood her.
I'm just teasing. We all we love our different dialects here on the
absolutely.
Show. All right.
Well,
Fred.
Listen, Jan, while you were away, I know you kept up with the news, the president announcing his Mideast peace plan, getting varying reviews. I mean, part of the peace plan is a two-nation state, two-state nations, you know, a separate nation for the Palestinians. Which a lot of Christians have problems just with that concept. But also the deal he tried to make with the Palestinians, I mean, we're talking, he said, $50 billion in economic incentives if they would accept the plan, which also involved the Israeli settlements that are in the West Bank staying the way they are. So were you surprised by anything the president said, and are you optimistic any of this is going to work?
And I'm trying to keep my answer real short because it gets a little on the complex side. Mm. And I would have to say that the evangelical and even the pro-Israel community is kind of torn about this. I've been listening to some teachers that are very popular, both on radio and online, and they're at odds with each other. I don't mean they're necessarily fighting, but their takeaway is just entirely different. And It's therefore it's hard for the followers who are trying to understand this from a biblical perspective. Let's set aside what man thinks and look at the Bible. And I think, Fred, you hit a couple of the important points. Number one, Israel would be divided. If you're going to have a Palestinian state, you're going to divide the land, which, of course, is forbidden. On the other hand, there are parts of Israel that are going to be benefited from this so-called deal of the century. It's got a lot of pros and it's got a lot of cons, and I think I would be leaning against it heavily because of the warnings about don't touch the land, don't divide the land. Leviticus 25, God says the land is mine. And there are certain things you can't do with it, which this so-called deal does do with it. So I am hesitant at best to, let's say, give this a big heads up. But at the same time, I don't want to completely denigrate it, and I think it probably was devised, our hunch is, by Jared Kushner, not the president. And the president does trust his son-in-law and put his stamp of approval on it, clearly. And Benjamin Netanyahu clearly is giving it its approval. But at the heart of it is the division of the land, and we don't have time to go into what's happened when past presidents have divided the land, which plenty of them have. There are consequences to that behavior.
Jen, one of the most interesting factors in all this is how the Palestinians have reacted violently against this plan. So in your judgment, and I suppose I'm just asking for a little political prognostication here, in your judgment, is this plan going to go anywhere given how strongly the Palestinians have reacted against it?
Well, and Fred raised that as well, and that's probably a key point here, is that it probably will go nowhere. Now, they have 4 years to implement all of this, so anything can happen in 4 years. For that matter, the rapture can happen in 4 years, and then we're dealing, the world is, not the church, but the world is dealing with the Antichrist after that phenomenon. But I don't think that anything is going to go hardly anywhere because, look, Israel doesn't have a peace partner. And I've said that a dozen times. I've probably said that with your news department and Chad there probably 50 times, is that Israel has never had a peace partner. They don't want peace. They want the fulfillment of Psalm 83. This is the Arab world, at least the more radical Arab world. Come, let us wipe out the very memory of Israel's existence. Now, what is intriguing with this plan is there are some moderate Arab nations that are signing onto it, which 10 years ago would have been unthinkable. But now there are some moderate Sunni nations because they're afraid of Iran and they want to unite behind America and Israel to defeat Iran. So they're getting behind it. So I think we all have to take a wait-and-see attitude. And remember Psalm 121, he who keeps Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. So God is in the midst of all of this, and I don't believe he will let his nation be harmed. I really don't. But still, America has a history of intervening where she probably shouldn't and stirring up some trouble. And we just don't want to see, we don't want to see harm come to the president's agenda. We want him to have another 4 years and 4 years of peace and prosperity. And I don't know if that's possible if we stir things up in Israel.
Jen, whether I should have or not, about a week or two ago when this was announced, I actually laughed on the air when Steve Jordahl was reading the different bullet points that sounded like an Obama plan on the two-state solution.
Right.
Now, it's not that bad, but it's really not that good either. There's some good things in it. But why do we feel this urge that we have to meet some kind of solution when people have been trying this, leaders have been trying this for decades? You know, I don't know why we were all of a sudden optimistic that the terrorists are going to come to the negotiating table and establish a stable democracy called Palestine.
You know, and I think that's a question that's gone through the minds of a lot of people, including me. And I mean, I'm sitting here thinking very often, why do we keep trying to reinvent the wheel when the wheel that was invented probably back in the 1970s under Jimmy Carter, that didn't work. Under Bill Clinton, it didn't work. Under George W. Bush, it didn't work. Barack Obama came along and did all he could to cause harm to Israel. Now we're trying it under Donald Trump. And the only thing I can come up with, and I may be completely out in left field here, but the only conclusion I came up with after all the failures that have gone on, yet we want to keep trying, is that Donald Trump is simply known for the art of the deal. And I just wonder if he didn't think and his son-in-law didn't think that because he's known as the deal maker, well, what do we have to lose? Let's at least try. Again, I don't think they're looking at the biblical perspective that nobody's allowed to do this. But I will say this, and I know through those that the few I do know in Washington well, and that would be Michelle Bachmann, who's really not serving in Washington at this time, but she lives here in the Twin Cities, and we do talk. She has weighed in on this to people in high places. Bill Koenig, White House correspondent, has weighed. In other words, they have gotten the truth to some people. I'm going to refrain naming the names of who they've gotten the truth to, the biblical truth, and I think it was pretty much blown off. And we all know Robert Jeffress is in there giving the president the truth. Mm-hmm. So my hunch is they think that they can maybe do it on their own, or that their deal-making is such that they actually have the art of the deal, and the president is known for the art of the deal. I don't know. I'm not an insider, but this is my perspective, particularly after talking with folks like Michelle, who know that the truth has been given to some people in high places, and whether mm-hmm. they choose to accept that, that's up to them. We can't control that. Mm-hmm.
Our guest has been Jan Markell, who's host of Understanding the Times, heard Saturdays at 1 p.m. Central Time and Sundays at 12 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio. Jan, what have you got cooking for the weekend?
We've got part two of our little expose of what the technology is doing to all of us, and we love it, but it's kind of a love-hate relationship because it's spying on us, and we just want listeners to be aware that we love the good side of technology, but it's got a dark side, and they need to prepare themselves and protect themselves, and when this is all handed to the Antichrist in the tribulation, they're handing him a system that will all be set up. Church is gone, but the world will be spied on and kept track of in an incredible way. The stage is being set now.
All right. Thank you, Jan, so much for being on with us today, okay?
Thank you for having me.
Just one kind of throwaway comment, which I, what Jan is saying is absolutely true, and I'm sure this will be a fantastic show that airs this weekend, Understanding the Times. But in terms of technology, my wife and I we're linked with Find a Friend or whatever it is on our iPhones. So what's funny is sometimes, you know, like on a Saturday, she's like, I'm going to go run to Wendy's and get something, blah, 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 blah. Or she's going to Walmart and she's going to stop by and get something on the way back for us to eat. And I'm wondering where she is. Sometimes she doesn't answer her phone, whatever. I just click on that, mm-hmm. and it shows me where she is.
Yep.
Okay, she's just 2 minutes away.
Yeah.
So I know my food is coming right down the road. Uh-huh. I can tell when she pulls up into the driveway.
Pretty handy, isn't
so
it?
It is handy, but you don't want people spying on you either. And I'm, mm-hmm. But listen, who really believes that the government is abusing technology?
I was just going to say, other right. people know where your wife is, too.
Yes, that's right. And probably know what she bought at wherever she bought it. All right. Dr. Alex McFarland, we know where he is, too. No, we actually don't. He's co-host of Exploring the Word, heard weekdays at 3 p.m. Central Time. Alex, welcome to the program. And, oh, by the way, where are you?
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be on. And I'm back home in North Carolina right now. I was in Tupelo up through yesterday, but
That's
got
right.
home last night.
Yeah. All right, Fred, what do we got for Alex?
Well, Alex, we're just about 4 months out from the next convention of the Southern Baptist Convention. And there is turmoil within the SBC over something that happened last year at their convention. And that has to do with Resolution 9. Now, Resolution 9 is an acceptance by the convention of, now the way the resolution read was using CRT, critical race theory, as an analytical tool. Now, that passed, I think, on the last day of the convention last year, and then people went home and started to read things about what critical race theory is. Basically, it's Marxist in its origin, in that the world is broken into oppressors and oppressed. And whether you know it or not, you're either an oppressor or the oppressed. So that's where it is. The writings that I've been seeing in the last couple of days lead me to believe, and I read Baptist Press, and I read the SBC Voices, which is a blog site by Southern Baptists. A lot of people are writing about this still because there are a lot of folks upset about learning about what critical race theory is all about. The writers seem to be saying, hey, we know it has evil beginnings, but they are still defending the passage of this resolution, saying that the SBC needs it because of racial tensions that still exist within the convention.
Oh, my goodness. That's like saying you give yourself cancer to overcome a hangnail, you know. And I'm not minimizing. Racism is wrong. Racism is certainly unchristian and ungodly. But, you know, I grew up Presbyterian, but I came to the Lord through a Southern Baptist Bible study when I was in college, and later was ordained in the Southern Baptist Church, worked for the North American Mission Board as their first apologetics leader before going to work for Focus on the Family. So I've got a lot of knowledge of the Southern Baptist, and I appreciate that denomination very much. Has racism existed in places and in the hearts of misguided people? Of course. But to embrace critical race theory, as the SBC did in Resolution 9 last year, it was very misguided. And in a way, the way the SBC passed that, the way that I would say it was railroaded through last year, was almost like how they did Obamacare, where, you know, back in 09, 010, Nancy Pelosi said, well, we've got to pass it, then we can read it and figure out what it is. It's just insane. Now, guys, let me just say this. Moments ago, it was my privilege to confirm a speaker, and the theological future of the SBC is so significant, and I can't till next week really go public, but on Saturday night, June 6th, right before the convention starts in Florida, we have got probably one of the two most well-known Christian speakers in the world, and I just literally moments ago confirmed a speaker that I want everybody listening, if you can possibly get to Orlando, Florida on Saturday night, June 6th, if you're a Southern Baptist leader, I beg of you to come as a messenger to this convention, because clearly the future of the SBC is at stake. Whether the Southern Baptists are going to be Great Commission, evangelistic, you know, preachers of the gospel like they've been for two centuries, or they're going to be leftist, progressive, dead arms of the Democrat Party. Like, I grew up in the PCUSA, and my dad was a conservative elder in the PCUSA, and we watched the PCUSA commit theological suicide. The SBC is at a crossroads like that, and so we're going to have a speaker come to give a rousing challenge to stay true to the gospel and to pull away from theological liberalism. Probably one of the two biggest Christian leaders in the world. I can't say who it is right this minute, but maybe next week we can, and we'll begin to promote, because Saturday night, June 6th, just before the convention begins in Florida, we're going to have really a prayer rally for the SBC, and in a larger sense, a prayer rally for America. Everybody's invited. We're going to have a great event to kick off the SBC convention and call this denomination to back to the Great Commission and away from progressive liberalism, which their embrace of CRT last year really represented.
Alex, I got to say, when I agreed to speak to the SBC, I thought I thought it was June 5th. I'm sorry.
And it's said
one of the two great speakers. No,
exactly. Exactly. Ed, yeah. Hey, man.
You don't have to.
I love and respect your mind and your voice.
I know. No, that was just a little bit of a joke. Ray, bail me out here, buddy.
Well, number one, Alex, you've got us all thinking here. Who could it be? Who could it be? Billy Graham's in heaven. That's all we know for sure. So who's in the new top twos? We're thinking about that, so, which is good, Alex. Don't tell us. We want to find out. Second, I'm thinking about the people in the pews who, by and large, the people in the pews of Southern Baptist churches are godly, God-fearing, Bible-believing.
Exactly.
Quite conservative. Two quick questions. Number one, when you talk about CRT, what is it? What does it mean? What are we talking about? And how did it infiltrate? Did it come in through the seminaries? Or what are we talking about here?
Well, there was a professor, he's passed away now, a guy named Derek Bell, and he was pretty much a Marxist. But he's the large mind behind critical race theory, and basically it says that racism is woven into the DNA of American society, and white supremacy has been this philosophical framework of America, and you know, if you don't think you're a racist, that's a strong indicator that you are, and the law is inherently racist, and sorry, my dog's decided to be on the radio all of a sudden. But critical race theory says that America is inherently racist and that we have to basically deconstruct America. And one of the things Derek Bell set forth, and this is kind of like waving red meat before an animal, that the gains of equality and racism were not happening quickly enough through normal legal channels, and that the civil rights movement of Dr. King and the civil rights amendment of the 60s, that's not sufficient. And the bottom line, when you've got people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and, you know, influential Democratic Party leaders that embrace critical race theory, and they have and they do, the critical race theorists are would only be satisfied with an absolute dismantling of America. And their long-term goal, and may God forbid that this happens, is really the elimination of the U.S. Constitution and the rewriting of our nation into a socialist, i.e. communist, gulag. I mean, really. And it would mean religious freedom, freedom of religious expression would go away. America, as I thought our president did so masterfully in the State of the Union speech on Tuesday night, it was just wonderful. Look, we're a nation of accountability, personal accountability, self-reliance, entrepreneurialism. You know, work hard, live right, say your prayers, and you can enjoy the accomplishments of your own hands. I mean, Americanism says, I'm not looking to the government to feed me or control me. We live morally in light of God and moral truth, but America is not about helpless little victims that need the government to be our nanny. America's about being a go-getter and a visionary and hardworking, and with God's help and for God's glory, I will plot my future and I'll work hard. And let me just say this, and I know I've kind of gone long, but liberalism, progressivism, critical race theory is dehumanizing because it, instead of making people industrious, independent, people made in the image of God, it makes one class victims and one class villains. And that might sound good off of the talking points of a Democrat PR campaign, but that's just not how reality is, and racism is not how the heart of most Americans are.
Okay. Alex, I was about to try to follow up and squeeze another question in, because this is happening. This critical race theory is a thing now among Southern Baptists, and we're going to find out more, and we'll be covering it more. We'll have you back on to talk about this in depth so we can ask some of these additional follow-up questions. I know these questions are popping off people's minds as they're listening to you speak. So we do appreciate, Alex, you addressing this. We will continue to follow this. Our news team, One News Now, will be following this. We've got Abe Hamilton III covers this. Mickey Addison, we've got people on this, folks. We are studying to keep show ourselves approved. Let's show say that. All right, Alex, thanks so much for being on with us, brother.
God bless you all. Thank you.
All right, folks, if the president breaks in for his speech, you'll know we are covering that live after the break.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.